from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The Missouri primary election is roughly 1 month away. While some candidates must wait until November to see if they win, that isn't the case for others. That includes the Democratic candidate for Missouri's 4th Senate District. Back in 2022, the Democrat won in November with 74% of the vote. That means for this district, the primary is the more important election. Steve Butts is one of the Democrats running for that Senate seat. Butts is currently serving his final months as the representative for Missouri's 81st House District. On this episode of Politically Speaking, Butts joins the show to talk about his candidacy, including what he feels needs to be done on the state level to continue St. Louis's recovery from last year's tornado. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some of those policies, to that peace and prosperity that we had some 4 to 5 years ago.
Everywhere is Democratic country once this Democrat's been there.
There are a lot of things in Washington that are very bipartisan, including some bills that I've already gotten passed.
And I think it works best when you can see both sides, but you have to pick one, and I firmly align with the Republicans.
But certainly, I think if she's running against one of the crazy dudes, certainly it's going to be a lot easier.
But I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in Oralto over somebody who has no substance.
I believe that you represent the party's values and you move forward, and that's what I have done.
Welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's State House and Politics reporter, Sarah Kellogg. Joining me across the table in St. Louis, he is St. Louis Public Radio's political correspondent,
Jason Rosenbaum.
And our guest today, he is the representative for the 81st District in the Missouri House of Representatives, but he is running for Missouri's 4th Senatorial District,
Steve Butts.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We have a lot to cover. Let's get right into it. For listeners who may not pay too much attention to the Missouri House, tell us who you are and how you got into Missouri politics.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate it. So, as I said, my name is Steve Butts, a lifelong resident of the city of St. Louis. And it's where my heart is, where we raised our family, where I still live to this very day. So I've been in the House of Representatives 8 years with term limits. I am finished with my time in the House, which I truly did love. I know some people say, how could you have loved it there? I do love the work. Not every day, certainly not everybody you work with. That's common. And at times the 8 years, you know, went by really quick towards the end. And at other times you felt like it was a life prison sentence that took forever. So after the 8 years, you hopefully get a wealth of knowledge, at least a working knowledge of things in Jefferson City and the legislature. You build some relationships that are going to be effective for the city, the county, and the state as a whole. And I certainly, I usually say it's a lot like I've been the third guy off the C-team bench in the House, no matter how hard you try. And after learning, paying your dues, I think the experience I have, my lived experience that I bring, will make a good transition to the Senate, where everybody is on the varsity.
Since you've termed out, you mentioned you're running for the senator for Missouri's 4th District, which includes part of St. Louis and St. Louis County. It includes my house, so I'm very invested in this race personally. Why did you decide to run besides the honor and opportunity of representing Jason Rosenbaum in the Senate?
Well, that was certainly top of mind, Jason. I want everybody, all the listeners, to know.
My ego is just going up.
It's hard to fit in this room, but no, I think I knew that I was at least in a unique place. I'm certainly not the only one in this place, but a unique place to say you've lived in this area your entire life. You have worked closely in St. Louis County and St. Louis City your entire professional life, and if I could bring that knowledge that I had gained in the House, along with my lived experience, both professionally and at the family and personal level, that I would be a good candidate, I thought, and I still believe the best candidate to represent St. Louis City and County at a time when we need that regional collaboration more than ever.
If you were to win the race, you would be following Senator Carla May, who is serving her final year as a senator from District 4. What do you want to do the same as Senator May, and what do you want to do differently?
The first thing I want to do the same as Carla May is my intention. I love her chief of staff, Dr. Jason Gross. I think he's one of the finest young people working in the Capitol. And that continuity is important to the district, I think. It's important to me personally. I met Jason many years before I decided to run. He was with Jamila Nasheed's team, and I always took part with the Angel Band Project, which is a ministry, a not-for-profit that was started after my sister's death about 15, 16 years ago to help survivors of sexual violence. And you might recall Jamila Nasheed was very big on that topic, rape survivors, sex trafficking, and she would host these forums. And myself with Rachel Ebling, who's the director of Angel Band, would just go and put up a booth and talk about what we do. And Jason Gross was the first person that introduced himself and welcomed us to the Capitol.
What would you want to do differently?
A better collaboration with parts of the county, especially in Clayton and Shrewsbury, even in St. Louis Hills, The Hill, places like that. I love Senator May, but you know they would say we just don't see her very much. So I think I will be more present. It's just my style of doing things. I like to meet people in person whenever possible, and I'm going to increase that effort for sure.
And why should constituents of the 4th District vote for you and not your opponent, Gina Mitten?
I think the biggest reason is we need someone that has excellent collaboration skills that can bring people together. And, you know, Gina and I know each other very well, and I'll just speak for myself that I find that as a strength of mine, the ability to work with others, collaborate, maybe have a stronger voice for the city. To me, that is a big issue. This is still about 60% in the city, and I cannot imagine the state senator from the 4th District not being from the city of St. Louis. I know that's a little colloquial. I'm not saying someone from Maplewood or Brentwood or Shrewsbury could not represent the district. But boy, I think that is critically important.
Let's talk about issues. The tornado recovery is still top of mind for a lot of people. And while I think that a lot of pressure is going to be on the federal delegation to get things like community development, block grant, disaster recovery funds, and the local level to implement these programs, there's still going to be probably a lot of focus on state level relief. What would you want to do as senator to continue the recovery for the city?
Well, there is no doubt this. I was there. Obviously, I was in the city the day the tornado hit. That night. Like I think a lot of people know, my professional career has been insurance, so you have to adjust claims. I got calls from people in the city that we insure. You know, a tree was down on their house, that type stuff. And so I handled two claims the night of the tornado. And I thought, well, this was bad, but not terrible. And then I saw the news, and then I went to where it was ground zero the next morning, and it was beyond anything most people have ever experienced. It was everybody knows how bad it was. And, you know, you always have that immediate push of a lot of people that want to help. And it was that way. And at the same time, you had to just put deep in your psyche that this is going to be many, many, many months and years to recover. It was in Joplin. It is in the flooding in Texas. It will be that way for us. But that first push of volunteerism that you saw for the first several weeks, it was a beautiful thing. There's no way to keep that perfect energy going, but I was able to use my expertise in just insurance claims. And when there were these town hall meetings on the north side, I was able to speak at several of them, just going over the coverages. Most people did have insurance that had occupied homes, up to about 70%. Most of those policies, though, were actual cash value policies to not get in the weeds, but they were never intended or they were misrepresented. I don't know. I wasn't there at the time of purchase. That it was not to rebuild your home. This was to get you a chunk of money to move on somewhere else with your life. That's a hard pill to swallow when you think and you know you want to stay in your immediate neighborhood and on your block and rebuild your home. Many of those homes just can't be rebuilt. The effort, you know, the governor was there right away. The senators were there. Certainly Mayor Spencer did more than any human being could. I mean, she gave it 120% every day for many, many days and continues so. The state funding, we're at about $190 million, which I keep making sure from my city contacts that we actually have that money. And they say, we do, you know, how we're going to use it. We want to use it to match, use it for block grants, get FEMA to move. But the state did step up pretty quick, and that has to grow. That was just a starting point. And as a state senator and even as a state rep, many of us just want to beat that drum that this is a time to not neglect St. Louis City in particular, the North Side in particular, and we're fighting for our unfair share of state funds at this time because of the tragedy that has occurred here.
All right. I'm really hesitant to go down this rabbit hole, but I feel like I need to because I talked with you about this specific issue. The legislature passed a tax credit that would have gone to help recoup tornado victims' deductibles. And I'm very familiar with this tax credit because as a tornado victim that lived in St. Louis County, I was eligible for this. It was almost $3,000. But it is not being sent to people because it was put in the same bill as the stadium funding and also the property tax. I'm just amazed and befuddled why the legislature didn't just repass this. And I think you are, too, because I talked with you about that. Do you think that's a failure of the legislature to tornado victims, that they have not gotten that tax credit?
Big time. I'm beyond embarrassed. And, yes, I fought to reintroduce it. I will again reintroduce it.
And to be clear, I'm not blaming you.
Yeah,
I want to
make
that clear.
But it affected a lot of people. So when it first came out, I was like, you know, again, this helps an important subset of folks that, as many people know, if you look on your home insurance policies, the deductibles for that have increased greatly. And $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, not unusual. This was a time to help homeowners recover part of that or all of that deductible expense so we can get rebuilding as we need to. Too many times, you know, Mike Moon brings up this point all the time. When you put these multiple topics together, how many times has this come back to bite us that there's either a court challenge on part of it, some gets thrown out, it all gets thrown out. The stupid chicken coop bill from 3 years ago caused more ruckus than any bill of that meaninglessness should have ever done so. So, yeah, it needs to be a single topic bill. It had tremendous agreements, probably going to pass with, you know, 99% approval. Hopefully we get it done in 2027, Jason. That's all I can say.
What additional policies would you like to see passed to aid the city when it comes to the tornado relief? Is it just more money or is it policy too?
Boy, I'm going to say it is more money. I mean, the issue is money. Federal, local, state, private sector, philanthropic sectors. It is everybody. To say it's not that is just disingenuous. We do know that there was so many vacant properties that needed to be torn down, were waiting to be torn down. I really do hope that this funding, first off, goes to people to rebuild their homes so they could stay where they live if these homes are salvageable. If not, we have to find replacement homes. But for the other, I'm going to say, thousands of properties that cannot be rebuilt, they need to be successfully torn down and that land redeveloped through new housing, urban gardening and farming. I know that might be a little bit in the weeds, no pun intended, but there are sections in Detroit that that I've followed for several years, got some family friends in Detroit. What they've been able to do with inner core urban farming on previously unused lots and dilapidated land is simply amazing. It's a space that one of my daughters works in, and I feel pretty passionate about that as well. Beautification, get the homes turned down, give the neighborhoods a chance to rebuild.
Are there different priorities you have for St. Louis City versus St. Louis County when it comes to how you would govern, be a senator?
You know, I think at least for the municipalities that the Senate 4 district encompasses compared to St. Louis City, St. Louis City has many, many more poverty challenges that are unique to the city, including schools. So for example, like, you know, I wouldn't be for a charter school or another option, for example, in Clayton. Clayton or Lindbergh School District that Shrewsbury is in. You know, I would say those people in many cases, and we know a lot of people like that, have left the city to get their kids into the Lindbergh District or the Clayton District or the Brentwood District or further out. What is unique in the city is we need those options to keep the remaining families here. And I don't know why that is such a big battle, for example, but certainly the city has more poverty challenges that need to be addressed that just don't apply near as much to the same level as the suburbs that are part of the Senate 4 district.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, creating laundry rooms with improved storage, workspace, and everyday function for one of the home's most used spaces. Inspiration at callmosby.com.
And we're back on Politically Speaking. We're going to continue our conversation with Steve Butts, who is the representative for the 81st District in the Missouri House, and he is running to be the senator for Missouri's 4th Senate District. Something that St. Louis is dealing right now is the aftermath of placing the St. Louis Police Department under a state-appointed board. You voted for this. It's a vote that put you in odds with many St. Louis Democrats in the House. Why did you vote for that bill?
You know, I spoke about this bill at least two or three times, taking my full 10 minutes or whatever I had in some cases to make my point. The first point that I always made was this is the single best thing we can do to improve morale in the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department on day one. At the time, I mean, morale was terrible. We were losing more officers to other suburban districts and beyond and or to retirement at a frightful clip. And that police response time only exasperated what many people that don't live in the city, I don't think can appreciate the time that we have to wait to get police response because of simply not having enough officers. So that was one, morale. I think secondly, if you talk to anyone who's involved with the police department in a non-political way, these are people who have served as police officers, men and women who were there under state control, say 12, 13, 14 years ago, and then local control 12, 13, 14 years later, would say there is no comparison to how poorly it's run, the finances are mismanaged, bills aren't paid, frustration on equipment, just nuts and bolts issues of running a business that was just going sideways that had nothing to do with politics or really direct policing. And this was the Ethical Society of Police, and I also made this point. So, you know, we're a very racially divided city. It's been something that we've dealt with for generations. But you guys tell me the last time that the Ethical Society of Police, the association that represents primarily black officers, and the POA, always colloquially known as the White Officers Association. Neither moniker is exactly accurate, but it's historically accurate. And those of us that live in the city understand where they're coming from, were together 100% on this issue. And their main reason was this department needs to be better managed. And this board should be functioning, and it is not currently, as an effective board of directors that run the business side of this situation.
I know this is kind of a pedantic, irrelevant point because this isn't what happened, but as a St. Louis County resident, I'm used to the county executive not having direct control over the police department because there's a board of police commissioners in St. Louis County, but it's appointed by the county executive. I understand like people don't like the mayor having direct control over a police department. Why wasn't there an effort to just have something similar to St. Louis County where the mayor appoints somebody and maybe there's restrictions on what he or she can say to that board? Because it seems like if that was the case, a lot of the problems we would have been prevented.
You know, I'm not always in the room where it happens. As a third guy off the C-team bench in the House, you're frequently not in the room where it happens. But I can tell you the inside baseball said that idea of exactly the way the county board of police commissioners worked was floated, and they simply could not come up with a workable solution with the previous administration. How much truth or falsehood is in that, I do not know, but it was certainly an idea that was floated because I think it was a common misconception that, to your point, Jason, many police departments have a board of police commissioners. It's just who gets to appoint them. The safety net, and why one of the key reasons I think I am running for this position is these appointees have to go through the city's state senators. You know, we will have those senators currently, they didn't exercise it, have veto power over these appointments. And I was a little disappointed in Senator May, and I told her so. I'm like, you know, I was just hoping.
What about Senator Roberts, though?
And you know.
Like, he has to have some responsibility on this, too.
He does. I'll say both. I just only had the personal conversation with Senator May because I have many more personal conversations with Carla May. That being said, I don't know all the reasons anybody's thinking there, but I'm just saying it is a safety valve for the citizens of the city that the two state senators from the city have a tremendous amount of input who gets to serve on this board. And I can assure the voters that if I am fortunate enough to be elected as that state senator, that will be a scrutiny that I will take very, very seriously.
So I mentioned the problems with this board, and the problems that are emerging is the board wants the city to spend significantly more money on the police department than either it has or it wants to do. They wanted to take money from the Rams settlement and from reserves, which they were smacked down in court for now. And they also want to raise pay for command staff. And I said this on the Politically Speaking Hour in St. Louis on the Air. I see the idea and reasoning behind paying higher level officers more. So you give an incentive for lower level officers to work their way up. But that cost the city several million dollars because they also had to raise money for the fire department. So I guess my question here is, because I understand that like city legislators are probably not going to be as influential on this board as the governor, who is probably telling this board what to do. Why is the board operating like this? Why are they basically not listening to any factions of the city government, including more conservative factions in the Board of Aldermen, who contend that state control so far has been a complete disaster so far?
So far it has. I could only hope and intend that it gets better with better players on the team. To think that we're not going to have some serious bumps. I knew we would have some serious bumps. I didn't think it was going to be this dysfunctional. It started with, and I've said this publicly many times, I do believe they've gotten some bad legal advice from the attorney that they've hired, Chris Scraville. And I only point to exactly what you said. It was a ridiculous, if it was a red herring, it was a bad idea to throw out the Rams money and the reserves. No one believes, I have an accounting background, a business background, no one would believe that that is part of general revenue. Now, does the city have to pay more? This is not just a state versus city mandate problem. This is a management versus labor problem. I also see it that way. This is a unionized group of folks who know that they are overworked, underpaid, and in many times, because of that, are put in increasingly dangerous positions. You mentioned pay parity with the fire department. We've lived under that system since 1970.
Yeah.
So, and I think it was a charter amendment on
it
just
is.
Citywide. So for people to say this is a reason to not raise police salaries, I'm like, that too is a red herring to me. We've worked successfully under this system since 1970. And I'm a city resident, a city taxpayer. It is fair to say when you see that officer, whether you know them personally because of your neighborhood or ward meeting, or whether it's a white shirt or a blue shirt, we have underpaid each and every one of those members of that department $10,000 to $15,000 every year that they have worked for us. If that's not a labor dispute, which should be a key Democratic Party endorser to stand with labor, and I know there is a balancing act. You can't bankrupt the city. At the same time, if we have that, if we can change that narrative and get more officers on the street, we I do believe with the innovation zone to downtown, with the growth that you see in downtown West, our wonderful neighborhoods, you know, the Grove, the Hill, et cetera, more people look and want to be in the city.
We're not quite a year into the board, controlling the police department, so it's early, I know, but was this a mistake? And if you think there was, or whatever it is, does the legislature have the responsibility to do anything about this since they essentially caused it?
I do not believe it is a mistake, and I hope that as these early bumps, and I know it was about a year ago that the members were nominated. They weren't confirmed until the second or third week of January. So I'm like, I know everybody says they've been in control for a year, and I'm like, well, they got confirmed like the middle of January. So it's more like 6 months, which is no excuse. It certainly did not need to be as confrontational. I do not know why it became that so quickly. It seems to me that the right way would have been behind closed doors to sit down with Paul Payne, the budget director, Kara Spencer, a member of the board, and say, look, here's realistically, we know we've got to raise pay. That's a common theme. We know we do. And people don't want to say, but we're going to force it at the expense of other city services, because certainly the mayor ran on providing an increased level of city services, and it's going to take money and collaboration.
Is there something you think the legislature should do on this, or is it kind of a wait and see matter as far as what statewide statute should go in?
Okay, I'm going to say it is a wait and see attitude, and here's why. When we went to local control 14 years ago, it's one of the reasons I supported the change. The wait and see was 13 or 14 years. That's a wait and see. Now, I'm not saying it has to wait that long, and if this board and it starts to have change in personnel as soon as 2027. I hope, and I know hope is not a strategy, but I'm going to say that clearly as new members come on this board, if they have an expertise in human resources, in budgeting, in criminal justice, just to throw out three things, in accounting, I think we will get there, because the point of this board is to properly direct the department's finances so that we can recruit and retain officers and get our staffing up so that we're not constantly relying on excessive overtime, overworked individuals, and a shortage of officers to respond to the citizens.
So an issue that's really gained momentum, even in the last month or so, is the construction of data centers across Missouri. What are your thoughts on this momentum of data center construction in both urban and rural parts of the state?
Yeah, I'm going to keep most of my comments to the urban parts of the state. But when people, the group in Festus, St. Louis guy, they were on our local news the most. I'm going to say, was it not beyond disingenuous, that or the one in St. Charles County, where things are so non-transparent that they say, we're not going to tell you who's building it, how long it's going to take, who's operating it. I'm like, why the secrecy? I that is beyond the pale. So the more I learn about data centers, and I'd be the first to admit 2 years ago, I don't know that I could have told you really what one is. I'd say a big building where they put a bunch of computer stuff. But, and we have them on smaller scales, even in the city and beyond. But these mega centers, first off, the local pushback, you know, people need to have buy-in. And there will be buy-in, I believe, if you say, are they safe? Are they important? Do they really bring tax revenue? Are they not dangerous to the environment? Do they address water concerns, et cetera? None of that was happening a year ago. I think you're going to see a lot more of that happen now. Locally in the city of St. Louis, it is my understanding from people that are very much in this space that the city has been negotiating very good deals and really important safeguards for the citizens of St. Louis. And we do have large swaths of formerly commercial, 100% commercial and industrial land, where certainly we have excess water. And now with these closed water loop systems that everybody seems to be knowing about, that's not an issue. Just we had one of our speakers last night with Ameren saying that these developers have to sign contracts. They are bound to the rate they're going to pay, even if they don't use everything they said, they're going to pay it. So protections for ratepayers there. The big thing for the city, in addition, is they're not subsidized, and these data centers are going to pay huge additions in property taxes with using virtually no city services. I'm like, this is a win for public schools in St. Louis. This is a win for funding for fire and EMS and police. I think that's a win. To have them located in the right places is critically important. And we certainly have acres and acres and acres that could be used for that. When it's on rural farmland that was going to be growing crops, I'm just saying, is it wise to take food production? Because you're never going to grow food where these things are, at least for a long, long time. To me, that's always a scary proposition. I would reutilize urban space that was commercial and industrial in nature and put it there, because that's the use of it.
What responsibility do you believe the state has to address data centers?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Not much, I know, because it's very much the municipal level. There has been a special committee that is formed now, and Representative Del Taylor, I mentioned him again, he was involved at least on fact-finding missions for these type data centers. The state, I'm pretty positive, is not going to have direct control, and I don't know that there's a lot of appetite for that, that they're going to leave it at the county level, the municipal level, and those communities that want the data centers are going to get those construction jobs, which are really a huge issue in building them. Some, not many, but some really high-paying jobs maintaining these data centers. And then, of course, the tax revenue that comes from them.
So in the Missouri Senate, when you're filing bills, you get an opportunity to have kind of your first three that you see as your biggest priority. What would be your first three bills you would file as a state senator for District 4?
You know, one I've been pushing because as a lifelong responsible gun owner and hunter, we have got to move the needle on some very common sense gun regulation. I have filed a couple bills in this way, and I'm going to keep pushing it. The one would directly affect what people commonly like to refer to as a red flag law, but it was so narrowly tailored that just said, the genesis of it was the CVPA shooting and the mother who knew her 19 or 20-year-old son was in trouble mentally. She found this assault-style weapon in her home, her own home, her own child, and calls the police and the police were unable to truly confiscate and remove that weapon. And that same weapon that had to get returned because of Missouri law was the same murder weapon a short time later at CVPA. So this bill, narrowly tailored, says if you have a resident member of your household that is having truly mental breakdown and struggling with their mental health, you can petition to have that weapon removed from the home for a period of up to 180 days. It did get a little bit of traction. Others on the Republican side, well, you know, if you would have said 30 days, I think we'd get with you. I said, fine. Next year I'll file it that it's 30 days. The point was to get it out of the home, narrowly tailored. I just think that one is so simple that we had to have it. The other along the same line of gun regulation, I was a supporter of concealed carry, very much not a supporter of constitutional carry that's been expanded to anyone, anywhere, anytime, regardless that you're 14, 15 years old, just walking around with a weapon. And the argument was made with others on the Republican side saying, hey, you know, we used to just hunt and we'd bring our rifles with us to school and then we'd go squirrel hunting or deer hunting. I'd said, yeah, it's true. But if you're born after about 1964 or five, you have to go through a 2-day hunter safety class to get that same permit now. So your sons, grandsons, your daughters and granddaughters are having to prove that they know how to handle a weapon to go into the woods to hunt. Surely we could make that a requirement for anyone. Just to have some common sense gun safety training would go a long way. That's a heavy lift, but it's one I believe in. One that affects my family directly, and I know actually Jason and I have talked about over the years, and that is to somehow expand special school district to include the city of St. Louis. We lose an additional number of families, and I don't have statistics on how many, but I know of three that are directly affiliated with my family that have had to move to the county where they didn't want to get their special needs child in SSD. How we can't have collaboration on something like that is beyond belief, and I think certainly would be, I would like to think, an easy lift. The third priority has to be on funding, and I hate to always say that St. Louis gets its unfair share, but you know, former Rep. Bruce DeGroat would always say, St. Louis never gets back. The St. Louis region never gets back the amount of money it sends into the state coffers. So making that a priority of saying, hey, the amount of money we send to Jeff City, we have to get our fair share of that back. I could give you the best example is when's the last time any of us saw really a state highway patrol on Highway 70 between downtown St. Louis and the airport, and I challenge anyone to tell me a more dangerous 12 miles of interstate than that interstate. To me, we should be getting at least 5% of that. So for St. Louis to at least get its fair share of funding.
So let's go to constitutional amendments that are going to be on the August ballot, and we'll have one question on one that's going to be in November. Amendment 4 would require a initiative petition that changes the Constitution to pass in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. How would you vote on that in August as a voter?
Strongly no, and here's why. Of all the amendments that are going to come up, certainly in August, and I presume even those in November, nothing will have a longer impact to the negative than this bill. For over 100 years, Missouri has used citizen-led initiative, collect hundreds of thousands of signatures to get a bill that a group wants on the ballot. To add an encumbrance of saying it's not just 51%, which some people would say it's too low. To me, it's worked for 100 plus years. It's not too low. They had the chance to raise that to, say, 57%. Yeah, they couldn't get their act together, and it didn't happen. So their compromise, and by they, I mean the Republicans, their compromise on this issue was to come up with this. It has to pass in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. So to think that is ever going to happen, I am sure it has never happened, could never happen, whether it was a very conservative idea that if an overwhelming amount of the non-Kansas City and St. Louis area wanted, if just Congressional District 1 voted no, it wouldn't pass. Mm-hmm. Outrageous, and it's in the Constitution, so it has a long, long shelf life. Equally outrageous, if the legislature wants to put something on the ballot, it stays the traditional rules. So I'm like, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. When you have statewide elections and you have a clear majority, again, I think that is showing the will of a large amount of voters. The argument goes, well, it's not the majority of citizens. And I'm like, okay, every citizen who's of voting age has the responsibility and the right to vote. That's under attack, of course. But just because people don't show up to vote, then they do not get a say in what passes.
Amendment 5, which would allow the legislature to expand sales and use taxes as a means to eliminate the income tax. How do you come down on that?
I'm voting no. I've spoke strongly against it, both in committee and on the floor. I do believe it's a fool's errand. Our marginal income tax rate of 4.7 currently that has been being reduced almost on an annual basis. At the time, 6 years ago, you two will remember, when we had the 3-4% accelerated cuts, champagne corks were going off. This was the hugest tax decrease in state history. People and businesses are going to flood into the state. I'm like, that was only 5 or 6 years ago. In my opinion, income taxes are the most fair way of taxing anyone because it's based upon the more you make, the more you pay. Makes sense to me. Sales tax, the least fair, especially when it's placed on essential items like food and clothing, just to pick on two things. This would allow a huge tax burden shift from income taxpayers to sales taxpayers, and in that legislation, increase those rates on any good or service. I don't care what you say in our Commerce Committee. You know, Missouri Chamber, others came up, the attorneys groups came up and said, well, we're not saying we're against it. As long as you exempt our industry, we will be neutral on the issue. I'm like, by the time every last industry says we're going to be taxing Netflix subscriptions or something.
Amendment 3, which will be on the November ballot, would overturn Amendment 3 from 2024, which enshrined abortion rights protections in the Missouri Constitution. Now, one of the reasons we're asking you this question is when I first met you in 2016 and I asked you about abortion, you basically said that you were against abortion rights. And I think it was probably coming from a religious perspective. I assume you're also against the death penalty as well. But I also know that you didn't vote for the 2019 bill ultimately that banned abortion. Did you go through like a metamorphosis on this issue? Basically,
and No. So we'll rewind the tape from 2016. Have I tried to be as pro-life as I can in the fullest definition of the word, including such things as death penalty and care for women and children and families in general? Yes. If you'll note on all those issues, the bill that came out and why back in 2019 I voted no on the final bill was, it failed to include exceptions of rape, incest, and the serious health complications for women, only life-threatening. And as you recall, what happened was there were plenty of examples of women that needed real, even at times, emergency care, and doctors were unwilling to do that. That is an extreme position. I think one not held by the vast majority of Missourians. Once it went to a statewide vote, just very recently, I thought the best way to settle this issue once and for all is have a statewide vote. I supported that effort. When it passed, you know, I guess, again, Pollyannishly thinking, well, the majority has spoken. That wasn't the case. It's already being brought back up, and I spoke against this on the House floor because this one is particularly disingenuous. It included the transgender banning that doesn't apply and is really not part of the bill. It is just saying that enshrining like the rape, incest, health of the mother type issues, which is now already the case, I think,
and only for 12 weeks. I want to make it. I think that it's an underplayed aspect of the new Amendment 3. You only have a 12-week window to get an abortion if you're a victim of rape or incest, and under the new Amendment 3, not the old Amendment 3, which I think it seems like a pretty inadequate window. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but
no, I've spoken publicly on that, even on the House floor, because it directly happened. To my sister, the story again that a lot of people know, she and her partner, both rape victims, and my sister dying of her injuries. I remember having this debate with Nick Schwer. How can you possibly expect someone who's gone through this kind of trauma of a rape to make this serious of a decision within 12 weeks? It's beyond the pale. And I know then that my no votes. You'd say, you even said right here, well, you've had a metamorphosis. I haven't. I've been as consistent on this issue and trying to represent all sides, which is my nature, to come to that consensus that if you didn't have, and I think the hand was overplayed, and that's why the amendment passed just a year and a half ago. There were many traditional pro-life people that voted for that bill. I'd say put it over the top. That vote was fairly close. But they were like, the ban that was then in force was too extreme.
So that's all the time we have. We would be talking way more, I think, if we had a limitless time, but we do have an editor. So and he'll call me out on that one, but I'm gonna stick with it. So thank you so much, Representative, for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much to both of you.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can listen and read to all of our reporting on stlpr.org. And Representative Butts, I'll give you a final pitch. Where can people find you, the information about your campaign, where you want it to be found?
So our website is votestevebutts.com, and you can certainly find me on Facebook, Steve Butts for State Senate District 4, and other social media platforms.
Thank you very much, and until next time, so long.
Politically Speaking is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Rachel Lippman, and me, Sarah Kellogg. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts.
Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, providing exterior solutions for homes with faded, cracked, or outdated siding. Details at callmosby.com.